Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 23rd of February 2024. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking Talking Newspaper and the Winchester Talking Magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And this phone number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. If there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. The main headlines this week are: fresh battle looms in new town fight, surgery demolition to make way for park nearly complete, disco fever at the cathedral. Let's have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather.
Fresh battle looms in new town fight. Campaigners object to plan for 3,000 homes. By Toby Oliver. Plans to build 3,000 homes on a Hampshire airfield have renewed fears of a possible new town at nearby Mitchell devastation. The land at Popham Airfield has been earmarked for development in the latest draft of Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council's local plan. The Deva Society, opponents of New Town for 30 years, is urging people to object to Popham Airfield being part of the local plan by the deadline of March the 4th. Local City Councillor Stephen Godfrey said, "I am opposed to the development at Popham Airfield, even if these extra homes were really needed to meet local demand. There are brownfield sites within the Basingstoke district that would be far more suitable to meet a local need, including at Whitchurch, Overton and Basingstoke itself." Tessa Robertson, chair of the Deva Society, said, "We are very concerned that Basingstoke Council is promoting a so-called garden village of 3,000 homes on Popham Airfield. This was done without seeking the views of the residents in Winchester District, just over the boundary, who live closest and would be impacted the most. Basingstoke's plans for massive development in the southwest of the borough includes not just Popham, but 7,500 houses at Southern Manydown, just to the east of North Waltham. The urban sprawl this would cause not only means the loss of thousands of acres of greenfields, but threatens the important green gap between Winchester and Basingstoke." An email to Deva Society members said, "This would have major impacts on our area and is only a stone's throw from the boundary with the Winchester district. We believe it could also make a new town at Mitchell Deva more likely. It would increase the pressure for a new town at Mitchell Deva station. The development at Popham is too small to make the schools, alterations to roads, including expensive changes to the A303 and other infrastructure, financially viable for a developer. But by joining with the developer of the new town, infrastructure costs could be shared." City Councillor Stephen Godfrey, a Conservative who represents Wanston and Mitchell Deva, is due to ask civic chiefs about the authorities' response at the full council meeting on Thursday, February the 22nd. He said, "I encourage all residents to send their comments on this proposal to Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council by March the 4th.
Let's have the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, surgery demolition to make way for park nearly complete. Demolition is nearly complete at the Friarsgate Medical Centre in Winchester, with plans in place to install a pop-up park. The building, which has been empty for nearly a decade, had deteriorated over the years of disuse and has been demolished over the past 4 months. It's part of the Central Winchester Regeneration Area, better known as Silver Hill. The City Council's development partner, Jigsaw Consortium, shared an update last week regarding the £100 million plus scheme to redevelop the area of the city between Friars Gate and the Broadway. In a meeting with the council, Jigsaw claims it will have a comprehensive plan together within the next year. Now, virtually all the demolition has been done. Most of the rubble has been cleared and only a couple of walls remain. The short-term plan is to create a pop-up park next to the River Itchen, undertake an archaeological dig, and create an area for informal teaching and cultural events. And this is accompanied with a big picture of what looks like a wasteland, a great flat area with a pile of rubble in the corner.
Let's have the third headline story, please, Jane.
Which is Dancing in the Moonlight, sell-out climax to festival, disco fever at the cathedral. Winchester Cathedral's Festival of the Moon climaxed with a spectacular sold-out silent disco. Two discos were held on Saturday, February the 2nd, one for families at 6 p.m, followed by an adults-only event at 8 p.m. Families gathered under the colourful lights illuminating the historic cathedral, busting to a move to the tunes blasting through their headphones. Three separate channels of music were available for selection, with current songs, cheesy throwbacks, and old-school garage anthems. People danced underneath the enormous moon sculpture, the centrepiece of the festival. John Blake, commercial director of Winchester Cathedral, said, "It's been wonderful to be able to broaden the audience for the local and regional community who wouldn't ordinarily have come down and visited the cathedral. The clergy are very happy that we're getting more people to visit, and everything we have done for the moon has sold out." During the festival, which centred around the huge installation Museum of the Moon by Luke Jerram, other events were held, such as a Pilates class, a kids' craft workshop, and a talk from an astronomer. Reporter Matt Rooks-Taylor was at the family disco. Here's what he thought. "I have never been to a silent disco prior to this one. As a student, I spent many a night in the club staggering home after drinking one too many. I can safely say this event was nothing like that. In fact, it was arguably better. After checking in, we were handed our brightly lit headphones, offering a drink, and got to work. This night's work consisted of cutting some serious shapes to an hour and a half of old-school garage hits, cheesy tunes, and modern anthems in what I would describe as a night of innocent fun. With three channels of music to choose from, there was something for everyone. My personal favourites were Levels by Avicii, Smooth by Santana, and Sugar by Francesco Yates and Robin Schulz. If you'd told me this time last year that I would be in the cathedral with a beer in my hand while belting out the chorus of Rolling in the Deep by Adele, I would have thought you were mad. It sounds like something out of a fever dream, but it was incredibly fun. The visuals were beautiful. The moon sculpture was surreal. Vivid disco lights combined with gorgeous Gothic architecture made for one of the most unique experiences of my life. We were quite literally dancing in the moonlight. Everywhere I looked, there were happy faces, and despite some questionable dance moves, everybody was visibly enjoying themselves. This was a genuinely fun and unique event, held in good faith. A sell-out event that gave exposure to the place of worship, bringing people in who wouldn't necessarily visit. I love this event. This was a very well-organised party with great music, beautiful visuals, and such a positive atmosphere. What's not to love? And this is accompanied by a delightful picture inside the cathedral, the arches lit up by colourful lights, but in the middle, an enormous moon with its craters on it and lit up by the lights in places. And underneath this, a family, I don't know whether it is the family of the reporter Matt Rooks-Taylor or not, but it could well be a family of a young man and his wife, and doing their dance moves with the headphones on and beaming, and below them the three children, two girls, arms in the air and beaming, and in front one little boy with a Spider-Man t-shirt and his arms stretched out high and a big beam on his face as he clearly danced to the music on his headphones.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Belgarum diary, letter from Westminster, first person and editorial comment, and we'll end with items of general news. And I'll start with the death notices. Orty, Dorothy Irene Dot Orty, peacefully. Denning, James Charles Denning, peacefully at Basingstoke Hospital. He was the son of Vice Admiral Sir Norman and Lady Iris Denning. Inder, nay Medley, Jane Inder, landlady of the Fox Inn at Bramdean, 1985 to 2012, aged 71. Maybe, Richard Maybe, aged 76. Merritt, Kathleen Mary Merritt, peacefully at Flowerdown Care Home, aged 76. Peacock, Dorothy Nay Webster Peacock, peacefully in Winchester, aged 80. Reed, Cynthia May Nay Arnold Reed, peacefully in hospital, aged 89. Salmon, Anne Rita Marjorie Salmon, peacefully at Winchester Hospice. And Wood, Penelope Jane Wood, late of Oliver's Battery, Winchester, aged 78, peacefully at Hawthorne's Care Home. Now it's time for Christian Comment, and over to you, Heather.
Christian Comment is about spiritual strength, by the Reverend Philip Crinks. What is spiritual strength and how do we build it? In his poem, Love's Endeavour, Love's Expense, W.H. Vanstone famously offered a Christian perspective. Spiritual strength is the ability to love well. If we look at the beauty of creation, we may feel the presence of a good and loving creator, and we may even feel ready to return that love. But, Vanstone provocatively asked, do we really understand the kind of spiritual strength involved in the highest forms of love? Morning glory, starlit sky, soaring music, scholar's truth, flights of swallows, autumn leaves, memory's treasure, grace of youth. Open are the gifts of God, gifts of love to mind and sense. Hidden is love's agony, love's endeavour, love's expense. Vanstone writes beautifully about the paradox of love. Spiritual strength involves embracing a kind of poverty or vulnerability. Drained is love in making full, bound in setting others free, poor in making many rich, weak in giving power to be. Physical strength does not have this paradoxical aspect. You either lift the heavy object or you can't. But there is still an interesting analogy as to what it takes to get stronger, physically and spiritually. If I asked you how you could get physically stronger, you would not find it too difficult to answer. Train, take some more exercise, perhaps get back to the gym, and eat well. In our spiritual lives, to build the spiritual strength and resilience which we need in order to live and love well in the modern world, the answer is the same. We need some training and some nourishment. In this season of Lent, and all year round, both these are available. To train, we have to test ourselves, and we can find inspiration in Jesus facing 40 days of testing. Command that these stones be made bread, the adversary says to the starving Jesus. Can we test ourselves to reject the easy option, which seems to give quick satisfaction, and instead walk the way of patient faith and perseverance? Cast yourself down spectacularly, for he will give his angels charge over you. Can we test ourselves to resist doing the thing which will turn all the attention onto us, trying to prove we are special, and instead walk the way of humility and self-acceptance? All these things I will give to you, the adversary says again, if you'll fall down and worship me. Can we test ourselves to resist those desires which go against our deepest values and instead walk the way of integrity and inner peace? As Jesus responds to these tests, he takes the next steps in the way of self-giving love, which will bring him in the end to the ultimate sacrifice. His life, death, and resurrection are sources of spiritual nourishment and sustenance, bringing us the love and peace for which we yearn. Therefore he, who shows us God, helplessly hangs upon the tree, and the nails and crown of thorns tell of what God's love must be. Here is God, no monarch he, throned in easy state to reign. Here is God, whose arms of love, aching, spent, the world sustain.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and you can write to the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. Now, there are 11 letters this week, and Noel will start.
Yes, it's a letter from Martin Holmes with a clever title, Jigsaw Puzzle, as you'll see in a minute. In your February the 15th edition, you carry reports of a meeting of Winchester City Council, WCC's, Regeneration Cabinet Committee, progress on regeneration and exciting update on Silver Hill. Neither gives cause for confidence that the current plans for these projects will be any more successful than previous schemes, or that council taxpayers' money is being spent wisely. On station approach, we learn that Design Engine will embark on another round of public engagement this summer, even though WCC has already committed £295,000 for a concept master plan to be delivered in spring 2025. It also emerges that Design Engine have already decided that they want to transform this from a place to park cars into somewhere with culture and events, but do not explain how this will be achieved by building up to 250 houses and unnecessary offices. Do they not realise that there is plenty of culture and events just 10 minutes away in the city centre? Perhaps they'll be enlightened when they eventually talk to the Central Winchester team. Jigsaw Consortium appear to be a bit ahead on Central Winchester and have discovered that the key concerns of residents are housing, movement and transport, design, heritage and culture, all things that emerged in every previous round of consultation and have been highlighted in many letters to the Hampshire Chronicle over the years. Despite telling us what we already know, WCC have signed a contract with Jigsaw for this project. To do exactly what and at what cost? Councillors Todd and Thompson are excited, but after 14 years and over £17 million, all that has been achieved is a slightly improved bus station and the demolition of the long empty Friarsgate Medical Centre. Is that really something to be excited about? I also find it confusing that demolishing Friarsgate without any immediate plan to replace it is trumpeted by councillors, but the council leader believes that for the derelict former River Park Leisure Centre, the right time to demolish it is when we know what will replace it. Also, Chronicle, February the 15th. Martin Holmes, Coverwell Gardens, Winchester.
And here we have Nick Ray writing, Low Par. The headline claim made in Flick Drummond MP's recent flurry of through-the-door leafleting in Winchester was, Flick did not vote to put sewage into our rivers. A fairly low bar, surely, in terms of political aspirations of a potential future MP for our city, but one that happens to be a toilet tissue of lies. Flick Drummond, along with 229 Conservative MPs, voted on January the 25th, 2023, for updated environmental targets aiming for 80% reduction in phosphates in rivers by 2038. In other words, a 15-year delay from the time of that vote until such measures take effect. Meanwhile, sewage disposal in the UK remains a national scandal in terms of government legislation, action and oversight by complicit regulatory bodies like the Environmental Agency and Ofwat. Other claims in Drummond's leaflets range from "our chalk streams are the cleanest that they've been in decades" to "this government is the greenest ever." In which case, why did Southern Water receive a record £90 million fine in 2021 for causing widespread pollution after pleading guilty to 6,971 unpermitted sewage discharges? Many more, too, since then. Meanwhile, Rishi Sunak's recent visit to Winchester High Street was the day after disruption to Southern Water supplies to parts of Winchester, including the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Computer Weekly was confirmed that Southern Water was hacked during this period of disruption. As a Southern Water customer, I am currently awaiting a response from them as to whether this was merely a ransomware attack and a potentially findable information commissioner-level breach of customer data, or whether this cyber attack was directly responsible for the loss of control of local water supply in the affected areas. Perhaps Flick Drummond and Southern Water could respond via these pages with an answer for customers like me, apparently stuck with this failing monopoly supplier. That was from Nick Ray, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
"Issues remain" is the headline for a letter from Graham Trussler. The furore caused by the showing of the TV drama Mr. Bates versus the Post Office has now been overtaken by more recent headlines in the media. But still, the many issues raised by the programme, not least reparation, remain outstanding. Could I suggest that we hold a day annually when we remember the service given to communities across the United Kingdom by the sub-postmasters and sub-postmistresses and celebrate them? In that way, ordinary members of the public could create an ongoing focus on the issue and could perhaps help to restore the sense of worth that was so cruelly taken away through false accusations. Graham Trussler, Langton's Court, Alsford.
And Robert Marcus says, sorry, Robert Marcus says that it's a laughing matter. "I had to contain myself from laughter when reading Flick Drummond's leaflet dropped through my door last week. She recommends Winchester residents stop flushing their loos when it's raining to prevent sewage flooding into our rivers. Next, they will recommend not drinking water when there's a drought. Is it time for a general election so we can flush this Conservative government down the toilet for good?" Robert Marcus, Wanston Road, Wanston.
And this from Annie Saunders is "Blame Joseph." Rather appropriately, "Much as I hate to disagree with my old friend Robert Marcus, Chronicle Letters Online, the blame for overflow sewage wastewater does not lie with the Conservative Party. Step forward Joseph Bazalgette, mastermind of the London sewage system. He was all for separating waste and groundwater. After all, there was a booming business in exporting waste to farmers to use as fertiliser. But then, a huge supply of guano, bird poo, was discovered, and the plan of using different pipage was abandoned. Disaster. And hence, our Victorian system of collecting waste and groundwater together remains to this day, and heavier than normal rainfall, caused, it is reliably claimed, by global warming, puts huge pressure on the system. If Lib Dem Danny Chambers wants to fix this, and he certainly seems passionate about the subject, then to implement Basil Getter's vision of separating waste would entail digging up every street in the UK. The cost would be stupendous, the entire NHS budget, and then some. But if that's what it takes, then vote Lib Dem. So maybe Flick Drummond's suggestion doesn't sound so daft after all. And that was from Annie Saunders, East Street, Alsford.
And Roger Stevens writes about sharing the dismay expressed by another writer. I share Mr. Ryder's dismay at being compelled to watch helplessly as the slow-motion train crash on the Andover Road takes place. What on earth was our county councillors thinking about when they agreed to divert a main road through a new housing estate? My conjecture is that the developer wanted to generate more traffic past the new supermarket and pub, so that the prospective tenants would contribute to the cost of their construction. Can any Chronicle reader offer any other suggestion? Even if ITV makes a drama about this, we shall probably never know the answer. All we can be certain about is that the perpetrators will go unpunished, their victims will continue to suffer, and the taxpayer will foot the bill. Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton.
And Kevin Lindley talks about the impact of cuts. Councillor Humby wrote last week that Hampshire County Council is consulting on yet more cuts to public services due to a significant £132 million budget shortfall on his watch. These cuts have a deep impact on our society, and yet it seems that the Conservative leadership is blinkered to the impact of their decision. We have schools closing, social services in disarray, and roads flooding and disintegrating. The latest proposal is to close household waste recycling centres. It's surprising to hear from Councillor Humby that there has been no evidence of increased fly tipping following closures of recycling centres elsewhere in the country. This is a case of not looking hard enough for evidence. It was not that long ago that we were assured by Conservative leaders that there was no evidence of parties in Downing Street during lockdown. We all feel the impact of our pockets of sharp annual increases in council tax, so how can it be that HCC is close to bankruptcy? If Councillor Humby were to look a bit harder, he will see that central government funding for councils was cut by 40% between 2010 and 2020 under the Conservative government. This cannot have helped. Kevin Lindley, Abbotswood Common Road, Bromsey.
And Michael Fielding writes, history lesson. Give them their due, the Lib Dems are very good at delivering newsletters throughout the town. However, there is a fault in the latest letter, for it states, Labour have never won here. Does the election of 1945 not count? I think that their candidate, George Yeager, polled 30,290 versus 27,259 for Gerald Palmer, who represented the Conservatives. However, I would agree that Labour will have very little chance this year. And that was from Michael Fielding, Cheriton Road, Full Flood.
Peter Rees writes about cancer concerns. The public background to the sad news that King Charles is a cancer victim makes grim reading. There are over 393,000 new cancer patients each year. 167,000 cancer patients die annually. In 2023, the government set the NHS three new targets to address the increase in notified cases. A target of 96% to achieve a treatment waiting time of 62 days, including treatment after a first consultation of 31 days. It missed the target at 91%. A target of 75% of people diagnosed within 28 days of urgent referral was missed at 72%. This target has never, ever been met since before October 2021. A target of 85% diagnosis to treatment within 62 days was also missed at 65%. Whatever the conquering cancer achievements were during this time, these self-imposed government targets failed, just like the government itself. No cancer waiting time target in England has ever been achieved. On the government website, 30 different categories of cancer waiting times from October 2023 are listed. Government speak tries to obscure the detail. Outstanding research, incredible clinical practice, nursing innovations, as well as public support, are still not enough to achieve attainable positive outcomes. No time lag from diagnosis to treatment start, currently set at 62 days. This government has failed to achieve its own targets, those it says will address the appalling anxiety of people diagnosed but not yet in treatment. The NHS continues to be underfunded and understaffed by government, so unable to meet unrealistic targets. In remembering all those who wait patiently for a diagnosis and cancer treatment, we respectfully wish His Majesty King Charles a successful treatment, a good recovery, and a long life well lived. Peter Rees, Winchester Labour Party, Monarch Way, Winchester.
And this letter from Dr. Harry Mycock has the headline, "Can the Bank Get Things Ticking?" And it's about the great big clock. There's a picture of down the high street, and a big clock prominent on the side of the bank. And the letter says, "There has been previous correspondence indicating dismay at the long-since clock on the old Guildhall in Winchester High Street that is now Lloyds Bank. With the annual bulletin of atomic scientists stating recently that their assessment of the state of danger from global threats, from climate catastrophe to nuclear war, means that we are worryingly just 90 seconds to midnight from catastrophe. It remains perturbing to look up and see that we've been just a minute to midnight for quite some time in Winchester. It would be a delight to see the clock fixed, but I hazard to guess that access to technical skills and cost might be considerable. The whole historic building must be quite a cost burden for the bank. Let's hope they don't use it as an excuse to close, as is happening to so many bank branches across the country. I hope to look forward to thanking the bank for getting things ticking along nicely soon." And that's Dr. Harry Mycock, Quarry Road, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
And Wendy Hunt writes, "Disgusting loos. Unfortunately, I needed to use the public toilet in Abbey Gardens. I went into the ladies, entered the last cubicle, and thought it needed flushing. Well, it didn't, as after I had flushed the toilet, it was still dirty and brown. I looked in another cubicle before leaving, and it was the same. Disgusting. This was not just one day's use. It was dreadful. What must visitors think? I'm sure many who get off the coaches opposite Abbey Gardens and go to use the loo wish they'd never arrived, if this is what Winchester has to offer. The toilet's near where Debenhams used to be, and never in a good state either. When and who is supposed to be cleaning them? I have lived in a third world country and have used pit latrines, which have been a darn sight cleaner than these. Our local toilets must be a health hazard, and surely something should be done." And that was from Wendy Hunt, rather appropriately, of Water Lane, Winchester.
And that concludes our letters to the editor. Thank you very much to all of our contributors. Heather's now going to read an alternative look at the news, because she's got Belgarum Diary.
And we have three items from Belgarum this week. The first has a picture of a deer sitting, looking at the photographer, well, standing, looking at the photographer. A fitness instructor had an unexpected visitor to one of her classes at Otterbourne Village Hall. Helen Clark of Enjoy Dance Fitness was preparing for a session at the hall in Cranbourne Drive when she spotted a deer in the car park. The four-legged friend, who didn't seem to mind Helen taking a photo, was munching on a hedge in broad daylight on the afternoon of Tuesday, February the 13th. Helen, aged 41, from Colden Common, said, "Well, I was just setting up for classes at Otterbourne Village Hall and glanced out into the car park and saw the deer in the corner. I quietly opened the door to try and get a photo, thinking it would probably run away, but it was completely unfazed, looking over at me and then carried on happily eating the hedge before disappearing a few minutes later. I've seen deer on a couple of occasions early in the mornings, but was quite surprised to see one there in the middle of the day, a lovely sight. Helen's been running classes such as Zumba, dance fitness and conditioning at Otterbourne Village Hall since August. The second item is a raptor discovered at a city centre lunch spot. And there's a picture of a rather unhappy, rather dead pigeon lying on the ground with a raptor perched on the top of it, with a lump of it in its mouth. A Winchester photographer was in for a big surprise when he spotted a sparrowhawk eating its lunch in the city centre. The photographer, who wished to remain anonymous, spotted the bird on Monday, February the 12th, while walking on Drury Street. The sparrowhawk was eating a pigeon it had caught. He said, "Well, when I first saw it, it was on top of the pigeon, which was hidden, so it looked wounded. I went to pick it up. It had no intention of leaving its lunch, so I retreated to take photos. I was extremely surprised to find this magnificent raptor munching lunch in Drury Street, of all places, oblivious to passers-by." And the third item is about a famous folk musician who's going to play in Twyford. World-renowned touring folk musician Martin Simpson will play St Mary's Church in Twyford for an intimate solo set this spring. Martin is widely considered to be one of the most talented acoustic and slide guitar players, and his performances have drawn praise and admiration over his career, which has spanned more than four decades. In his shows, he performs both original and traditional covers, for which he's been described as a remarkable storyteller. He is listed in Gibson Guitar's top 30 acoustic guitarists of all time, and Acoustic Guitar Readers voted him number 12 guitarist in the world in 2005. Canadian musician Stephen Fearing said, "Martin Simpson's transcended borders and oceans to quietly become a superb storyteller and musician of great depth and unquestionable taste." Martin's been nominated for various BBC Radio 2 Folk Awards 32 times, winning many accolades throughout the years, such as 2004's Musician of the Year and 2008's Best Album with Prodigal Son. He now tours up and down the United Kingdom and beyond, playing English traditional folk, American folk and blues, and his own compositions. And the show is on Saturday, April the 18th, in Twyford St Mary's Church, and tickets are £20 in advance.
We've got a letter from Westminster this week, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, letter from Westminster by Steve Brine, MP. A confession. As a parent, I fail every day. Not in every regard, but in one important way. How and how much our teenagers use their mobile phones. Travelling long distance together last week for half term, it was more obvious than ever the pull of these devices is very powerful. The issue has had even more publicity than usual in recent weeks since the murder of Breonna Gay. Her mother is leading calls for under-16s to no longer be allowed access to a smartphone. The push has attracted a lot of support, and stick to bricks, as in the old Nokia phone, which can just about make calls and send a text, is one of the campaign groups getting noticed. Personally, I think the genie is out of the bottle, and it would be a brave government that goes down this road, but perhaps it should. I don't believe there are many upsides to smartphones, and in particular social media for our children. I suspect our kids know in their heart they are addicted to endless scroll of TikTok or Instagram. Aside from the often pointless content, maybe the rapid-fire nature of the material does rewire a young brain to struggle with concentration on anything for very long. Think about it. Have you had a conversation, at least lately, with a young person about reading, really reading, a book, and not got very far? Maybe, just maybe, that's because a novel requires patience to see a plot develop that can't be swiped to the next dopamine hit. Truth is, we know very little for sure of the long-term consequences. Not unlike vaping, where we are acting, perhaps it's everywhere and we just don't know the sting in the tail. As the chair of the health committee, I'm always talking about prevention of ill health. Well, some £100 million has been spent by the government in the last 2 years on the soaring mental health needs of school pupils. Yet more than 1 million children each year are referred to CAMHS, that's C-A-M-H-S. Prevention is, after all, better than cure, so I do wonder if it's time to be radical. On a related note, just this week, the Education Secretary delivered on her promise to ban mobile phones in schools. In practice, this simply means new guidance for head teachers. The moment of truth locally comes when we seek to understand whether any of this is different to what our schools are already doing. Speaking to head teachers, it's clear they already ban phones, if that means they must stay switched off in their bags during the school day. Does this happen? For some, yes, but for many, of course not. Teachers, every bit as much as parents, are on the front line here. I understand the three Winchester heads, Kings, Westgate and Henry Beaufort, have recently asked parents' views on how they would like to move forward. The results, which will be fascinating, are currently being analysed with the hope to create a unified position across all three secondary schools. This is eminently sensible to my mind. Many say schools should be more literal in the ban, but children, some who travel not insignificant differences each day to Henry B, or parents, for instance, should not, in my opinion, be without any means to contact their parents. Truth is, there's always a limit to what the state, locally or nationally, can do. School years are some of the most precious, and they pass in a moment. Children with support of us all, because they're not adults, need to put down their phones, look up, and enjoy them.
And it's time for first person, and Jane's going to read that.
And here we have Surreal Disco Under a Moon by Joanna Lewis. Last weekend, thanks to an invitation from a dear friend, a group of us braved the silent disco in Winchester Cathedral. By the time you read this, I should be able to walk properly again. To be honest, dear reader, I was always a bit nervous about the event. This wasn't just because I'd not been out for a girls' night in Winchester since 2019, except I've become extremely boring and need to get out more. But was this the right event for us, I pondered. One person was still recovering from a hip operation. On the morning before, I had emergency physio for lower back pain. It's not the best start to a going out when you take the edge off with an ibuprofen rather than a rum and coke. I also had serious misgivings about the venue itself. Could we really let go with abandon in the sacred space of Winchester Cathedral? A haven of tranquillity and peace for hundreds of years. Wasn't this a profanity? The advice on the website was to wear trainers and not to damage the tiles. Oh, holy flip-flops! Would I be able to jump around in this hallowed place? I was in for an almighty shock before I went through the doors. Silent discos aren't at all silent. Sure, everyone wears headphones and no sound blasts out from speakers, but as we approached the giant hall, all its seating removed, a strange, muffled, primordial chanting ebbed and flowed. Hundreds of young people in a kind of slow-mo murmuration were singing along to what they were hearing. But with a choice of channels, they all heard different songs. We also quickly realised we were a lot older than almost everyone there. It was surreal. The giant moon exhibit loomed large above, the cathedral illuminated by coloured headphones. Very superstitious, Stevie Wonder sang into my headset. No time for any academic debate about how deeply ironic it was hearing that in a building consecrated to end that sort of thing. We just had to get stuck in and get on down. Everyone seemed to be having a blast. At times, I struggled, if I'm honest. At one point, I had Beyoncé in my ear rhetorically asking, "Baby, can you handle this? Is my body too bootylicious for you?" I looked down whilst interpreting the music, make of that what you will, to find I was on top of the Reverend Edward Salter. His memorial plaque read, "Died 1912. If he wasn't turning in his grave by now, he was certainly getting jiggy with it. It was hard to move to a safer spot. The nave area looked feral, a terrifying medieval mosh pit to my middle-aged sensibilities. To my right, one woman was doing some strange movements over a wine bottle. A small crowd quickly gathered, but I persevered. I pumped up the jam like the very best of them. I flash danced. I obediently went back once again to the renegade master. I learnt it helped to face away from the Jane Austen memorial. However, I was soon tested to breaking. The DJ interrupted with the kind of challenge anybody sober on a dance floor dreads. Ah, oh, I bet no one in a cathedral under a moon has done a giant conga. Come on, Winchester! Perhaps it served me right. For attempting the Macarena immediately afterwards, I felt my knee go. Was it the hardness of the flagstones, or the revenge of Robert Crawford I was now jumping on? I improvised. But it's not the best of looks, dancing to a medley of Grease using only your upper body. I look like the Tin Man from The Wizard of Oz. I limped out at 9:30 p.m. when the music stopped. Touchingly, most of the young audience stayed on, singing and swaying to their generational anthems. Who says the devil has all the best tunes?
Editorial comment then, Heather.
Thank you. A new battle plan over Popham Airfield. I'm sorry, I'm going to read that again. I've made nonsense of it. I beg your pardon. A new battle over Popham Airfield plan. There were a lot of people in the early 1990s who gave little chance to the Diva Society when it formed to fight plans for the new town centred on Mitchell Devastation. Many thought that the developers, then insurance giant Eagle Star, were too wealthy and too patient to be deterred in the long run. Well, a lot of people were wrong. The Diva Society has prevailed, not through the power of NIMBYism, but because the plan for a new town slap-bang in the middle of unspoiled Hampshire downland was a bad one. It was a bad one in the early 1990s, and it remains a bad one in the mid-2020s. But now a new threat emerges. Popham Garden Village is proposed for the airfield next to the A303 and very close to Mitchell Devastation. This is a huge scheme of 3,000 houses, which is not as big as Mitchell Dever New Town, but big enough to undermine one of the main arguments that the Diva Society campaigners have put forward, which is that this is part of central Hampshire and unspoilt. Basingstoke and Dean Borough Council has been putting together its new local plan, and Popham Garden Village has emerged very stealthily in the draft. It must be resisted. The arguments against Popham Garden Village are similar to those against Mitchell Dever New Town. It would appear that the Basingstoke planners have thought they can tick off a big chunk of their required housing by plonking it on the edge of their district, almost where no one will notice. But it is being noticed and will be resisted. A weakness in the planning system has been revealed by the lack of consultation between Basingstoke and Winchester councils over such a major scheme, right on a shared boundary.
Let's look at lighting up times. Friday the 23rd of February ends at 7:04 a.m. and begins at 5:35 p.m. But on Wednesday the 28th of February it ends at 6:53 a.m. and begins at 5:44 p.m. Some items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, and this is from the Young Reporter column in the Chronicle. A treasure trove of books by Madeline Crabtree. Tucked away from Winchester bustling town centre at 10A St George's Street is the Winchester Bookshop, an absolute treasure trove of second-hand books. Notice the signs on the street summoning you in. Walk down a narrow passageway until you reach a large door, and push that door open to reveal an array of yellow and orange leather-bound antiquarian and vintage books. From here, climb the winding staircase to discover two more floors with books that range across genres from Shakespearean plays to modern-day novelists, with the average price of a paperback varying from £1 to £2. The store was opened in 1991 when Michael Green, who had owned a news agency opposite to where W.H. Smith is today, advocated the idea of three other local book dealers. Due to the separate interests of the four men, the store reflected their range of interests, leading to the wide range of genres offered today. Now, 32 years later, the store is still being run by one of these four, Douglas Barnes, alongside Anne Louise Barton, the daughter of one of his former co-workers. Anne Louise has worked at the store for 13 years, describing it as charming and fascinating, and reflecting on how she has grown up among second-hand books, saying there is a joy of anticipation, not knowing what books are going to turn up next, and a sense of satisfaction in being able to rehome them. The Winchester Bookshop is open from Tuesday to Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. If you have any books that you haven't the slightest idea what to do with, give them a call. The way in which the store's extensive collection is maintained is through the purchasing of unwanted books, giving these stories to a second-hand chance to be treasured and enjoyed. Have any queries? Call 01962 855 630. That's 01962 855 630, or email winchesterbookshop@gmail.com. And this article was written by Madeline Crabtree from Peter Simmons College as part of NewsQuest Young Reporter Scheme.
And here we have Design Topic Stretches Imaginations. Members of Winchester Flower Club took part in a particularly interesting topic of flower arranging this month, not normally seen as a medium with which to work, a pavé, from the French word pave or pavement. This design involves the use of flowers, berries and foliage with short stems set very closely together so as to make the base invisible. Indeed, vegetables were the choice of one member. The idea was to be inventive. Members found it a most enjoyable experience, with the chairman demonstrator, Ros Hall, encouraging many to stretch their imaginations, which resulted in the many differing and colourful interpretations of the pavé design displayed on the table. If you wish to join this happy throng, the club is always pleased to see new faces. Guests are welcome, and you can find the meeting at St Faith's Hall, Back Street, St Cross, on the second Thursday of the month, commencing at 2 p.m. And this is accompanied by a picture of all the flower arrangers in St Faith's Hall. And there is also, they're not all ladies, there is Brother Andrew, I can see there in the middle as well. And there is a beautiful set of decorations of the pavé on the table in front of them. Definitely no bases visible. And one I can see, they're very colourful, but one definitely has Brussels sprouts all around the bottom.
Mum's Challenge for Charity in Memory of Son. A local woman is running in the London Half Marathon this spring in memory of her son Cameron, who passed away 10 years ago. Corinne Cruikshank, aged 64, of St Giles Hill, is taking part in the event to raise money for the Cameron Bespoke Trust. The trust aims to inspire and encourage young people to love and appreciate wildlife. and our environment. As Cameron, aged 16, was a keen naturalist and had a love of wildlife. He'd renovated Cameron's cottage, which opened 2.5 years ago in an RSPB nature reserve in the New Forest. It is an off-grid retreat for young people to learn about nature. Corinne said after losing Cameron, which is the most devastating thing that can happen to someone, as a family we were looking at a way of channeling our grief. So we set up the Cameron Bespoke Bust. And there's a picture of a smiling woman, which was taken in 2023 at the start of the Winchester Run, 10K run, wearing a white T-shirt, surrounded by other people all waiting for the race to start. And the T-shirt says, "Running for Cameron, Winchester 10K 2023.
Magical and surreal setting for Pilates class. A sold-out Pilates class at Winchester Cathedral met under the huge moon installation. Louise Daniels, 43, of the New Forest, hosted the class for more than 60 people across 2 days under the Luc Jerram art piece. The classes started at 7 a.m, giving people a chance to get some early exercise in. Louise spent 10 minutes alone in the cathedral before the class started, experiencing the exhibition, which she said was quite incredible and worth going to see. She said it was absolutely phenomenal. It's such a beautiful building and it was like nothing I've ever experienced before. It felt quite magical. A few of the ladies that I walked out with said it felt surreal. The music and the ambience was really special. Louisa is based in Dipton Purlieu at Pilates Studio New Forest and hosts a variety of classes including Rocket Yoga, TRX Pilates and Guided Meditation. The exhibition in the cathedral features a massive high-resolution projected model of the moon, 7 metres in diameter, suspended from the ceiling of the medieval edifice. The sphere is lit up from the inside, with each centimetre being an accurate image of 5 kilometres of the lunar surface.
And here we have runners from far and wide. The annual Winchester 10K returned to the city centre last weekend as runners pounded the pavement on a glorious Sunday. The Winchester 10K has been an annual event since 1983 and has become a popular event for runners from far and wide. There were several road closures in place throughout the morning, with the 10K comprising of a one-lap closed road route starting outside the Winchester Guildhall in the Broadway, up St George's Street, before going out towards Kingsworthy. The return leg then passed through Hebbornworthy and back towards Winchester before finishing at the North Walls Recreation Centre. There was a mixture of abilities among the competitors. Coming first was George King from Winchester and District AC with a time of 32:45. Picture bottom right. Second was Jacob Ainsley in 34:08. And third was Leo Malefant from Aldershot and Farnham District with 34:10. Coming first for the women was Katie O'Hare from Pontypridd Rodents AC with a time of 41:43. And this is accompanied by many pictures. There are three showing here of runners running. It said a glorious day, but it does look as if they're running through enormous puddles of water when they're on the road and all looking quite serious and rather exhausted.
University rewarded. Lecturers at the University of Winchester have been honoured with an award from the British Dietetic Association, the BDA, for developing new practice-based learning that provides early exposure to hospital wards for dietitian students. The Mealtime Assistant Volunteer Placement, created by Dr. Emma Parsons, Senior Lecturer and Programme Lead in Nutrition and Dietetics, and Irantsu Aragi Fresneda, Lecturer and Year 1 Module Lead for Dietetic Practice Education, received the Dame Barbara Clayton Award for innovation. The scheme started in 2021 and more than 70 students have taken part. This is the first of 5 placements for student dietitians at Winchester, the only university in the United Kingdom offering such a placement. It allows students to begin clinical training in a hospital setting within their first semester. The student volunteers' work involves providing and preparing patients and their environment for meals, supporting them with completing the meal, ordering system, and assisting patients with food and drink at meal times. And Dr. Parsons believes the placement ran over a long enough period for them to build up a rapport with both staff and patients. And of course, the program provides the hospital with extra eyes, ears, and hands at meal times, some of the busiest periods on any ward.
Neighbours plea over hostel fears. Fear is growing among residents due to antisocial behaviour linked to Winchester City Council hostels. Around 50 residents near Milford House in St Cross are pressuring civic chiefs to tackle crime in the area and introduce more housing for the homeless. They believe incidents such as violence, intimidating behaviour, drug dealing, aggressive shouting, syringes being thrown into neighbours' gardens, and loud music are predominantly linked to the resident and visitors to Milford House and some to Gordon Watson House, both in Christchurch Road. The group of neighbours, led by Terry Butler and Martina Plezek, both of Lansdowne Avenue, launched a petition to review the need for accommodation and safeguard the future of Milford House as a matter of urgency. The petition's aim is for Winchester City Council to only admit responsible people on the council house waiting list to Milford House. The home of Mr. Butler, an ex-director of social services for Hampshire County Council and former chairman of Emmaus Hampshire, was the target of an attempted burglary in September. In a letter to Winchester City Council, he said, "I would guess that the more responsible occupants of Milford and Gordon House must have been experiencing a torrid time recently. We've lived here for 23 years, and several other neighbours considerably more than that, and have never known such poor management of these units. I am fully aware of the legal duties of the County and City Council with regard to the health and social care of their populations, their responsibilities towards homelessness, and their duties to people living in adjacent neighbourhoods to their social housing units, whether they be run by themselves or by partner organisations. This latter duty is clearly failing badly. For brevity's sake, the petition only scratches the surface of the many incidents. Martina and I have heard from a hitherto supportive and tolerant diverse community, many of whom are elderly, frail, or have special needs, as well as children and young persons. The residents sent letters in hope of having them discussed at the Economy and Housing Committee on Tuesday, February the 20th. Meeting Chair, Councillor James Batho, said a petition from residents near Milford House has been received by the officer team, and we will be responding to those residents and working with them during the consultation.
And tickets go on sale for Big Sleep Out. A homelessness charity in Winchester is once again encouraging people to ditch their home comforts for a night under the stars. Registration is open for Trinity's next Big Sleep Out in the grounds of Winchester College on Friday, May the 24th. The evening consists of fundraising, music, entertainment, building cardboard shelters and food from local vendors. From 11 p.m, all participants settle down for the night. Every penny raised in sponsorship will go back into Trinity's services, helping people out of homelessness. Sue McKenna, Chief Executive of Trinity Winchester, said, "This is our biggest event of the year, bringing in people from all over the city for this unique night. The sleep out is not an experience of homelessness, as we will all return for a warm shower and home the following morning, but it is an eye-opening way to raise money and awareness for our services. Last year, over £27,000 was raised from this event and put back into providing long-term support for vulnerable people. We would love your help in achieving that again this year." And this is accompanied by a picture clearly from last year's sleep out of a lot of people around with sleeping bags and mats, and also great big boxes that they're trying to work out how they can perhaps turn into something to lie on or lie under should it rain, and wearing big t-shirts saying the big sleep out.
Fury erupts at helicopter bid. Furious residents have slammed a renewed bid for unrestricted helicopter landings in the garden of a 1.3 million Hampshire mansion. People living near the property on Stapleford Lane in Durley oppose plans which would allow lawyer Myers Carrier to fly clients to his mansion. Mr. Carrier originally applied for permission for no more than 2 round trips per month between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. and this was approved by the City Council in March last year for the site in Stapleford Lane. However, the lawyer revised his plans, requesting unrestricted flights in a new application submitted in June. Resident Jane Woodhouse opposed the unacceptable proposals, as residents deserve to sit in our gardens and enjoy the view and the quietness. The plans were thrown out by Winchester City Council, as it ruled this would result in unacceptable additional noise and disturbance on neighbouring residents. However, in a last attempt to get the plans through, an appeal has been lodged with the Planning Inspectorate. Residents are furious and want the proposals to be rejected once again. Pensioner Geoffrey Travis, aged 79, and his wife Shirley, 77, have lived on Stapleford Lane for 30 years and say their quiet retirement is at risk with these plans. Shirley said, "We moved from West End because we wanted the peace and tranquility and no noise coming from the road outside. I would hate to think there would be a helicopter coming in and out, flying over our heads. It would be detrimental. I don't want to sit in my garden while a helicopter flies over my head. I don't even know what it would do to our roof tiles." Geoffrey, who used to own a family-run car dismantler company, said, "I spent my career in a noisy environment. And when we moved, we built this property to have a quiet life, not for a noisy helicopter to be flying in and out. A decision is now awaited."
Overall crime rate falls again. Crime reported in Winchester has decreased again, but violent and sexual crimes have increased, according to the latest police data. In December 2023, the most recent month available, 562 crimes were reported across the district, which is down from 633 crimes the previous month, according to data.police.uk. The most common category was violence and sexual offences, with 222 offences, which is up from 213 reports in November. Public order offences were the second most common category, with 59 reports during the month, followed by 49 antisocial behaviour offences.
And here we have 35K appeal launched by Threatened Theatre. A Winchester theatre is appealing for support as it begins its bid to become a charity to secure its long-term future. Directors of the Nutshell Theatre in King's Walk have said their services are at immediate risk if it doesn't act now. The organisation aims to raise £35,000 to fund core costs, rebuild its reserves, grow its bursary scheme and continue its programme while it becomes a charity. The Nutshell Theatre and Discarded Nut Theatre Company plan to merge into one charity delivering creative services later this year. Noel Jones, artistic director, said, "We're very passionate about the work that we do, particularly with young people, and this appeal is vital in helping us to continue. Becoming a charity opens up so many funding opportunities for us and will mean we can keep providing access to the arts for all members of our community. We've seen the joy and well-being benefits that being involved in the programme of work we offer can bring to people, and there's still so much more we want to do." Harriet Morris, executive producer, said, When we first set up and took on the building in 2018, we had already been running Discarded Nuts since 2010, so we had grown our theatre company into something really high level with fantastic engagement. We were apprehensive about taking on a physical space, so we decided to keep both organisations separate to start with and see if it works, which it does. We wanted to create a small grassroots venue with accessible price points and lots of creative opportunities. The options for us to explore more funding are not there unless we become a charity. The work we do is already so closely aligned to charitable objectives. We've got a great team of trustees and we want to use that energy to take it forward. As a charity, we will be able to access capital funding projects. Our priority will be to install a lift and improve accessibility. We have been hit really hard by COVID and the cost of living crisis. The impact on the arts is still being felt. It wiped our reserves. We were dipping into them to keep ticket prices low when we reopened. Anything people can give means the world to us. If anyone would rather book a ticket or say hello and tell their mates about us, that would make all the difference. The theatre company is applying to become a charity in the coming weeks, but won't receive a response for up to 6 months. In the meantime, The Nutshell has launched a crowdfunder to raise £35,000. The money raised will go towards extending the pay, what you can, and bursary schemes and staff wages. And this is accompanied by two lovely photos, one inside the Nutshell Theatre, all lit up with beautiful lights and involving a large crowd of young people in the navy leggings and T-shirts of the Nutshell, all dancing together, beautifully timed and with big beams on their faces. Plus, below, the jazz club at the Nutshell with a group of adult jazz players singing to an audience.
Village Pub given a new lease of life, and this is accompanied by two pictures. One is of the menu, which lists the normal things you'd expect. It says starters or small plates, burgers, signature dishes, sides and desserts, but there's also a thing called hangies, and that's explained by the other picture. It's a plate, but it has a metal rod coming up from it with a hook at the end. And on that is hanging a chicken kebab. Luckily, it is hanging over the plate. So, you know, the other bits and pieces are on the plate, but that must be what a hangy is. I'm over the moon that the pub virtually on my doorstep is serving food again. And not just any food. The kind that makes you feel like you're in a fancy city restaurant while sitting in the comfort of your local. The rising sun in Colden Common has been given a new lease of life since the new owner, who lives round the corner, took over. I've lived in the village for just over a year and a half now, and the transformation of the pub is working wonders. New green paint and furniture have given the restaurant area the facelift it needed, with the space previously feeling a bit more like a tea room. My partner and I particularly liked the light fixtures, which look as if they were made from old pipes. Meanwhile, on the drinking side of the pub, there are social staples like a pool table and darts board, and every time I drive past the window by the pool table, it always seems to be being used too, which is great to see. Visiting on a Wednesday night, we were expecting it to be relatively quiet, but there was a constant flow of happy customers coming in to try the new menu. The staff were wonderfully attentive without constantly buzzing around while we were eating. I opted for the Moroccan vegetable tagine made with sweet potato and couscous, and it was a real winter warmer. There was a great selection of hearty veg with a subtle heat to it, which was the perfect feel-good meal after a long day at work. My boyfriend chose the teriyaki, hanging chicken kebab, which was spectacular just to look at, let alone eat. It's the kind of dish you'd expect at a Brazilian grill, not your village pub next door. It came with a generous portion of chips, enough for me to slyly steal some, salad and slaw. Looking round the room, it seemed as if the regulars had come in to give the menu a try for the first time and were dazzled by the hanging kebab too, Mind you, I did fear for the waiters, who had the tricky task of carrying the swinging chicken from the kitchen to the tables. If this wasn't enough, we also got the Thai spiced fish bites to start with, which were just divine. Not like your normal breaded appetizers. The texture of the crust mixed with the spice and the mint yogurt was heaven, and especially good to keep us going while we waited for our mains. We couldn't resist trying the onion rings either. I kid you not, they were the biggest, crispest onion rings I have ever had. We were absolutely stuffed from all the savoury goodness, so had to turn down dessert. However, my strawberry lemonade, with a strawberry on the side, which made it feel like a classy cocktail, and my boyfriend's fruity fusion passion fruit and orange drink went down a treat. It's lovely to see how welcoming to feedback the staff are too. Even signs in the bathroom encourage emails and messages for any local suggestions. And as a proper local pub, the new manager has gone about reviving it in exactly the right way, keeping customers in the loop at every stage and maintaining the community favourites like the meat draw and the quiz.
GP to retire after 31 years at practice. A Winchester GP who has served the community for more than 30 years has announced her retirement. Dr. Nikki Wright will be leaving the Friarsgate practice, where she has worked for 31 years, at the end of March. The 59-year-old told the Chronicle that she has very mixed feelings about stepping down. Dr. Wright said, "I've been there half my life and I've really enjoyed my time there with my colleagues and our lovely patients. I've seen people through a lot of difficult times in their lives and got to know them quite well, so those relationships I'll be sad to lose. The general practice has changed a lot over the last 30 years, and it's quite an exhausting job. Most of the time it's about a 12-hour day, and by the end of the day I'm usually exhausted, so I'm looking forward to having more time and energy to do what I want to do." Dr. Wright raised some concerns about those changes, saying that patients have had longer waits for hospital appointments since the COVID-19 pandemic. She continued, "During that time they're coming back to us and saying, 'I'm getting worse, is there anything you can do?' We have a new system called Advice and Guidance, which is useful as we can email consultants for advice and they email us back. But we've then got to have another meeting with the patient to present that plan, which is more work for the primary care to do. One positive development is the Primary Care Network, or PCN. We're lucky to have three practices in the PCN, and we work closely together and employ pharmacists and physiotherapists, all of which has been helpful for our patients." Dr. Wright said that after a break, she would like to focus more on preventative care.
And now, 10th birthday showcase event. A Winchester business specialising in artificial trees for events such as weddings has celebrated its 10th anniversary in style. Twilight Trees held a celebratory event at its showroom at Manor Farm, Chilcombe. Using some of the company's products, the showroom was decorated to provide a journey through the seasons. The event was attended by invited clients and friends with drinks and nibbles served throughout. Company director Andrew Reed Thomas, whose wife Susie founded Twilight Trees, told the Chronicle, "First of all, we are really proud and excited because for any business, I think the last 10 years has been turbulent, especially in the events industry. You went from having a lot going on and then nothing for a few years because of COVID. To come out the other side with a locally based team, which is important to us, is really exciting. There was a pent-up demand coming out of COVID, and we managed to slingshot into 2022-23, and it's been crazy since then. There was a concern that it would be gloomy after COVID, but you only have to go into Winchester to see how well things have recovered. The economy is pretty good, and I think there are people who are doing well." Andrew continued, "We are good at transforming spaces, and what we've done is to take an industrial unit and create an incredible atmosphere. It's a walk through the seasons. To be able to have a bit of showcase has been fantastic. We're lucky that family, friends and clients have been so supportive of our work. We like to think of ourselves as a big family, and saying a little thank you to all those people is very important." Andrew said that he is hoping the company will expand to larger premises in the next few years, but confirmed that Twilight Trees is committed to staying local in Winchester. And this is accompanied by four delightful photographs in the dark of people walking underneath, all clasping a glass of sparkling wine, I think, by the looks of it, apart from the children, underneath colourful trees. They look like cherry trees or blossom trees, but presumably they are not real, and they're covered in sparkling little lights of all different colours, which really makes an extremely attractive environment.
Spa brings well-being to cafe and workspace. A cafe and co-working space has opened up a relaxing area with a sauna and ice baths with views of St. Catherine's Hill. The Pump House in Garnier Road has launched the Winchester Garden Spa, expanding its offering for members and the general public for solo escapes, romantic breaks, or to wind down from work. The spa in St. Cross includes a relaxation area with seats, rugs, a fire pit, and a table to order food and drinks to, two cold water plunge pools, and a wood-fired sauna with a window looking over the River Itchen and St. Catherine's Hill in the backdrop. Managing Director Alex Donnan said, "Well, there are still little things we need to improve on, but we're getting a lot of repeat bookings. We haven't advertised it, so it's mostly been publicised through word of mouth. I don't think we have anything else quite like it in the area. Even the hotels lack spa facilities. And this is somewhat between a hotel spa and a rural spa. Customers have the luxury of being able to order food or drinks while they're here, and they can have a hot shower after too. In a really remote woodland spa, you are unlikely to have the hospitality attached to it. It's been really good so far. We're still ironing out some little bits, and the response has been wonderful. I want people to be able to work in comfort and look after their mental health. Having the opportunity to do something like this, even during their work day, is great. We're trying to bring hospitality and health into the co-working space. I know how important looking after your well-being is. From a business perspective, we also wanted to utilise the space we have. It's such a scenic spot." Mr. Donnan was also the owner of Cafe's Autumn House in the Square and number 25 in Stockbridge Road, Fulflood, but declined to comment on their closures. The Pump House was opened 2 years ago as a co-working space during the week and a cafe, lounge and bar at the weekend. The Garden Spa is open to anyone, but there is a discount for Pump House members.
Memorial service for Joyful Pilgrim. A Thanksgiving service in memory of Canon Peter Seale has been held at St. Paul's Church in Winchester. Held at the church in Fulflood on Monday, February the 12th, the service gave thanks to the life of the late Canon, who died in February last year at the age of 65. Welcomed by the current rector, Reverend Dr. Jonathan Vereau, and led by the Reverend Canon Professor Liz Stewart, the service was a memorial for a man whose ministry in Winchester spanned more than three decades. The very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, recalled how a room lit up when Peter walked in. Peter was, she suggested, the parish priest that every member of the clergy wanted to be. Paying tribute to his father, Philip reminded attendees that Peter was a decisive, clear, gentle and tender man, but one with the kind of deep fire of faith burning within him. Peter, he told the congregation, was the fifth in an ancestral line of priests and championed an inclusive theology, a sense of wit and mischief, and the important art of being able to welcome interruptions, however busy he was. Bill Lucas, church warden at St. Paul's, described Peter as a man who epitomized love and joy. He spoke of Peter's belief that everyone is a pilgrim on a journey. The Building for Life project, which has transformed both St. Matthew's and St. Paul's churches, Bill said, was a manifestation of Peter's worldview, creating churches with soft edges where all are welcome. As part of the service, the Right Reverend David Williams, Bishop of Basingstoke, invited all present to reaffirm their baptismal vows, and the Reverend Mary Copping blessed a newly carved memorial stone, which says, Canon Peter Seal, Rector 2001 to 2021, Joyful Pilgrim.
Shoppers react to body shop threat. Shoppers in Winchester are expecting to see their body shop branch close after the company announced it has entered administration. The body shop released a statement on Tuesday, February the 13th, saying that it has appointed an advisory firm, FRP, as its administrators to find the best options to sustain the cosmetic company's future. More than 2,000 jobs across the country are at risk, including those at the branch in Winchester High Street. The chain will continue to trade online and through its stores during administration, but Winchester shoppers believe their branch could be one of the first shops to close to cut costs. Sisters Olivia and Grace Cahill of Hairstock Road were on their way to see if they could get any deals after hearing the news. Medical school graduate Olivia, 24, said, I used to go there when I was like 18 because that was the place to go downtown. Accessorize, Primark and Body Shop were the three you had to go to. And I'm not surprised they're going into administration because of its high prices for what they're offering, especially with Boots and Superdrug so nearby. Peter Simmons' student, Grace, 18, said, no one my age goes there anymore. Jane Lamprey, 55, a housewife from Shawford, said, it's a shame when anywhere closes. It's another high street staple, and Body Shop definitely contributes to the variety of shops here in Winchester. Maisie Burke, 20, a healthcare assistant from Badger Farm, said, it would be a shame if the Winchester store closed and all the jobs that would be lost isn't great at all. And there's a photograph of Maisie Burke standing in front of the Winchester Body Shop in the High Street, still with its lights on and all the offerings inside.
Roman Winchester revealed in new book. And there's a photograph of three men each involved with the book. Martin Biddle, the professor, Dr. Francis Morris, and Dr. Giles Clark. And they're each holding one of the volumes that are quite large and elegantly produced. A new book has created a window through which we can see life in Winchester during the Roman period. It is in two volumes, but it is also available as an e-book from Archaeopress for £16. The book presents findings from archaeological digs which took place around 50 years ago. Details never before published of the history of the city are included. And the city, of course, was named Ventnor Bulgarum by the Romans. Produced by the Winchester Excavations Committee, it was launched at Winchester School of Art. Ventnor Bulgarum, prehistoric Roman and post-Roman Winchester, is the latest in the groundbreaking Winchester Studies series and draws on discoveries made as far back as the 1960s. The authors are Francis Morris and Martin Biddle, who've been involved in archaeological excavations in Winchester for 60 years. And this is the first of the Winchester Studies series to publish detailed site reports of the archaeology from his excavations. Ventnor Bulgarum, the name the Romans gave the settlement, was laid out in a site that is now the modern core of the city. This name was a romanization of the Britannic word for market, Venta, and the name of the tribe that lived in the area, the Belgae. It essentially means market of the Belgae. The research and publication have been funded through support from Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council, as well as some trusts and individuals, including the de Laszlo Foundation and the late Nigel McNair Scott. And I will repeat the e-book publisher. It's available from Archaeopress for £16 online.
Comedy star Hugh's new role. Hugh Dennis, the comedian known for Outnumbered and Mock the Week, is to become the new Chancellor of the University of Winchester. He succeeds TV gardener and writer Alan Titchmarsh, who served as Chancellor for 6 years. In recent years, Hugh has campaigned to raise funds and awareness for Dementia Friends and the Alzheimer's Society. Hugh has close family ties to Winchester and the cathedral. His father, who was a bishop in the Church of England, spent his retirement in the city and was an honorary assistant bishop in the diocese. Hugh said, "I know the city of Winchester well, and it's a great honour to become Chancellor of such a vibrant university." Hugh will be formally installed as Chancellor at a ceremony in the spring. One of his first official duties will be to preside over some of the graduation ceremonies.
Concludes the extracts for the week, ending 23rd of February. Thank you to our editors for choosing the extracts, and thank you to our memory stick preparation, copying and dispatch teams. And thanks to today's readers, Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
From me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening, and I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.